Please join me in the serenity prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Okay, let's give a warm San Clemente welcome to this evening's 40-minute speaker, who's Rob from San Clemente.
You get my bearings here. My name is Rob, and believe it or not, I am an alcoholic. And it's good to be in a room full of miracles. Miracle for me is that I got through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm grateful for that. Can everybody hear me okay? So I got to move these things closer. All right. I don't like them in front of me. Jordan only told me that there's going to be like 15 people here, and you know, there's a lot of people here. Believe it or not, I am an alcoholic. I need to recognize some of the things that were given to me in early sobriety. And that was given to me by my house manager. I spent a year in a recovery home, and he was a light in my sobriety. He gave me so many things and guided me through so many things. And you know, he was a great person. So I carried that on. And then another guy pointed out that there's miracles. You know, there's miracles everywhere. And he used a room full of miracles. And then I got that. You know, the room full of miracles. And my miracle is that I got through these doors. So I'm going to try to share my experience, strength, and hope. What it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. Hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving. I did. I remember my last drunk Thanksgiving. I remember my first sober Thanksgiving. And yesterday. Yesterday, I got to spend my first Thanksgiving just with me and my kids, and I made turkey dinner. You know, that's I had never done that before, and as a matter of fact, I've never spoken before, so there's always a first for everything. My last drunk Thanksgiving, I spent it at my parents' house, and I was passed out on their family on our family family room floor, and I remember waking up in a pool of vomit, and the pool of vomit looked like pumpkin pie. It was pretty bad. It was pretty disgusting. And my first, yesterday, I had asked my daughter permission to go to the club. There's San Clemente Friendship Center, and they had a turkey shindig. And my first sober Thanksgiving was at a club, and it was the only place that I could go. And so I remember that. It was a good time, and I really appreciate that that places like that exist. So let's see, where do I go from there? I always wanted you guys to accept me. As a kid, I remember I don't think I was ever born. I think I was just squeezed out of a dirty bar rag. There was a few things in my life that I remember, and I'm not going to sing the song, but I'll recite the song. It goes something like this. Oh my God, the world's gone wrong. I've been drunk too goddamn long. Don't give a damn if the whole world freezes. Don't give a good goddamn by Jesus. Nobody loves me. Aw, shit. I learned that when I was, I think, about 9 or 10. That was a great song. I learned it from a guy who, I don't know if you guys know, those mopeds, right, the little cart ones. He came crashing into my parents' house, and this was a regular occurrence, drunk, on the go-ped or moped, crashing into my parents' bushes, coming in and drinking. And that's what I learned. And I remember, I'm saying this stuff because these are the way that I had thought. You know, these are young childhood memories that I've had, and maybe somebody can relate to, you know, sitting on a hill and wishing your parents dead, you know, and praying to your God as you understand them that your parents would be dead. That was the type of thinking that I had, and that type of thinking was very young. Lots of parties at my parents' house. But, you know, I was a middle-class American kid. Yeah. There's something in the book that I wanted to point out. I'm going to fumble through this every once in a while. That there were, in 1976, there were 19 million copies, a little bit more than that, of this book printed. I got a lot of hope when I opened the book and I started reading that there were 19 million copies given out. It's a huge number. If you don't think that you're an alcoholic, what I did was I started reading this book, and it explained a lot. If you don't think that you're an alcoholic, there's a doctor's opinion in here, and the doctor's opinion kind of outlines what we have. I have this malady, an obsession of the mind and body. You know, once I pick up the drink, I can't stop. Something else in my sobriety that I learned is anything that affects me from the neck up is a drug, and alcohol is a drug. It used to be yelled at me, actually, but that's a different story. So it started. As a young kid. My first drunk was when I was about 9 or 10. My sister came home with a boyfriend, and they had a 12-pack of beer. And I drank 6 of those beers, and they drank the other 6. And that's how I drank. And it started going from there. Everything that I did revolved around trying to get loaded, trying to get drunk, trying to get whatever it was that I needed in order to. It wasn't about what we were doing. It was about getting the alcohol, the drugs, or whatever before we did anything else. And I did that so much. That was the pursuit. That was where I wanted to go. Yeah. And you'll hear me say that quite often, yeah. I'm a little bit lost here, so bear with me. So somewhere along the line, it was about the 90s, somewhere around there, my sister decided that she had a problem with alcohol. She got into the rooms of this program, and she invited me to go, and I had gone, and it wasn't for me at that time. And I remember telling her, you know, she doesn't have an alcohol problem. She's just got issues. You know, there's something else wrong with her. It wasn't the alcohol. It was she's just got issues. And it didn't click with me at that time. I didn't understand it. then I decided that, you know, I was going to keep going on throughout life and do the life thing. And I decided that I was going to get married. And before I actually could get married, my then wife said, or my then fiance said, you know, before we get married, I want you to be sober for a year. I said, great. You know, so I did it. I didn't drink for a year. And then I didn't drink while we were married for about 5 years. And she said something to me. She said, you know, Rob, it's not that I don't like you drinking. It's just how much you drink. I didn't hear it's not how much I drink. It was, I just don't mind you drinking, but it's okay now. And it was off and running, and I was gone. And I started drinking again. And it progressively, this thing is a progressive disease. It keeps going and going and going. And eventually it got me here. And I got here on my own volition. I wasn't nudged from the judge. It wasn't anything else. I got here because I had hit, I was a high bottom. You know, I only lost everything. I didn't get to some of the places that I've heard in this program. So, anyway, back a little bit to the book. After the copies of it, there's another part in here that I read. It's in the preface. It said how thousands of men and women have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And I don't quote me on that because I didn't find it yet in the book. When I got here, that gave me hope, a lot of hope. You know, it showed me that I can get better. So, some hope. So, when I lost everything, well, let me tell you another little tidbit before I actually got here. I had a lot of support. My last, some of my last drunks were by myself. A lot of them by myself. And if you don't think you can get drunk in Utah, you haven't been with me. 2002, I was in Utah by myself and drinking. And it got really pathetic. At the end of my drinking career, I'm jumping a little bit. The end of my drinking career, I went to New York and I wasn't done. I wasn't quite done drinking, and I got really, really drunk there. So drunk that it was the first time that I'd ever had a blackout. And I woke up the next morning with blood and remembering thoughts of suicide, jumping out the window and wanting to kill myself. And a lot of blood, and I wasn't sure where the blood came from. But I was done. I knew I was done. And I had just enough sobriety, not sobriety, but I started delving into this program. I went to places like Charlie Street, and somebody had given me a book, and I started reading it, and I just wasn't sure. But when I went to New York, I knew that I was done. And what I did was I picked up the phone, and I called Central Office in New York, and they pointed me to a place called the Mustard Seed. And I don't know what Mustard Seed is. It's downtown New York somewhere. I pretty sure that it's been there for a while. And I got there, and people welcomed me. I was still shaking and baking. I was so messed up. But people greeted me there, and they greeted me with open arms. And I remember that they invited me to breakfast. And we went to breakfast, and a couple of them, one of them got out of the chair. It was a bar kind of thing. One of them got out and said, "Get in." And I got in, and they said, "You're now part of." And I felt a tremendous amount of relief at that point, tremendous amount of relief, knowing that somebody else had gone through what I had gone through and what I was going through. They could relate to it. That's why the most important person in here is the newcomer, people who can remind me of what it was like. I love listening to newcomers. I love hearing their stories because I have a forgetter. I tend to forget what it was like. And I listen to them, and they remind me, you guys are welcome, you know, you're loved here. It's something that I didn't know. I didn't know that other people loved me. I didn't know that people would accept me for who I am, regardless of who I am. So that was my first, I knew that I needed this thing. So I got back from New York, and I had a lot of support. I had a boss who, I called him up basically and said, "I need to get the hell out of here. You need to send me somewhere, anywhere. I don't care." So that's where I ended up, was in New York. So he was actually very supportive of me. When I got back here, though, I had a job, but I didn't have anywhere to live, and I was pretty much lost. I was deer in the headlights. Just like I am now. You know, I don't know what the hell I'm doing up here, but, you know, here I am. And I learned a little bit enough to, at that, in New York, that people held their hand out and were willing to offer help. And so I knew, okay, I knew where to go, and that's what I did. I went to meetings. People did the same thing. At every meeting that I've ever gone to, somebody's held out their hand. And as I said, I didn't have a home. So the first meeting that I went to, I shared that. I said, you know, I'm homeless. I need some place to live. I know nothing about this. And somebody said, okay, well, I'll help you. I'll take you out, and we'll go find some place to live. And that's what he did. And I don't know who this guy was. We spent the whole day together. I don't remember his name. I do remember that we found a place for me to live, and then we went kayaking the rest of the day. You know how that works? I don't know. I do know today how that works, and it's an absolute miracle. It's a higher power that everything is exactly the way it should be. I don't want to be up here, but you know, I was thinking about taking a poll, and I'm like, okay, how many people really want to be here? And then I said, well, how many people really don't want to be up here? And I thought, you know what? Everybody's lying. You know, because I come to meetings and I'm like, I don't want to be here, and then the other side of me says, oh yeah, I do. Then I go out of the meetings and I'm like, oh yeah, that was great. I always take out what I can get. I always get what I open my ears up to. So anyway, a little sidetrack there. I was at getting a home, and so we found that home, and my house manager was there. He was a big, tall guy, long hair. It was in Huntington Beach, and it was called the Villa by the Sea, and there was about eight of us in there. It was a four-bedroom house. My rent was $100 a week, and man, what a deal. I loved that place. I lived there for a year. And I know this thing works because I know he's still sober. And I know the owner of the house is still sober. But I don't know about any of my roommates. I don't know about any of them. There were two cots, two beds to a room. And I lived there for a year, and I think I had about 20 different roommates. And out of those 20 different roommates in my room, I think four of them are dead. And I know one of them died with a needle in his arm, and the other one died on the beach. And then, you know, it's progressive and devastating disease. One guy was actually I'm clueless on this, is when they were rolling him up, there were bottles in this small little 10x10 room. There were bottles in the room, and I'm clueless to it, you know, and the guy was drinking, and interesting. Anyway, there is hope. A lot of the guys that I did know and have seen go through this program are sober today. I have a lot of good friends who have worked the program. So one of the things that my house manager told me that I needed to do, which was a meeting a day. And I did three meetings a day. They gave me a court card for the house, not for the courts, to show that I was actually going to meetings. I went to three meetings a day. I went to a meeting at 6 a.m. in the morning, 6 p.m. at night, and 8 o'clock at night. And I did that for my first year of sobriety. So they said, you need to go to meetings. Meetings are not the program. They said you needed to get what we've coined as a sponsor. And sponsorship is something that, how I understand it, and through a new pair of glasses and some other things, is Bill and Bob used to have to check people out of hospitals. And in order to check them out of the hospital, they had to be sponsored. And so Bill and Bob would go to the hospitals and check people out, and that's where the term or coined name of the sponsor came from. In the big book, it says that they're trusted friends. And I have so many trusted friends in this program that I'm overwhelmed and blessed to have in my life. And to see the growth in those guys, man, is awesome. Just totally what a gift to see growth in other people. So anyway, they said, you know, I needed a sponsor. And so I did. I got a sponsor. And I still talk to him today. And the last conversation, well, not the last conversation I had with him, but one of the conversations I had with him was about smoking. And it was something that was really, really tearing me apart. And I'll get to how I worked the program in just a minute. But this was tearing me apart. I smoke. And I called him up and I said, you know, I'm having this difficulty with smoking and my sobriety, and does it make me any less sober if I smoke or not? Because, you know, anything that's affecting me from the head up is a drug. And there's a lot of different things that I still do. You know, I still have long hair. It's a resentment. In early sobriety, I grew my hair long, and then I cut it, and because I let go of that resentment, and I don't know what this resentment is, but it's some resentment. Coffee, you know, this is my security blanket right here. You know, I carry around a security blanket, and smoking is one of them as well. But I know that if I continue working this program, I'll figure them out. There's continuous growth in this thing. Anyway, he said. He told me, he said, you know what, Rob, it doesn't make you any less sober, it just makes you an addict. Okay, great, thanks, whatever. So anyway, he and I had sat down and started going through this program and reading the book. And this is where the program is in this book, the big book. Reading it, identifying with it, and doing what's suggested in here. It described, I didn't know what it was. It described this malady, this obsession of the mind and body, which I've had all my life. The doctor goes through it, of what it is. And I have this dilemma. I have a dilemma that I'm powerless. I'm powerless over persons, places, and things. I want to control everything. I want you to like me. I don't want you to like me. I want this. I want that. I just have this way of thinking that's different. And when I pick up the drink, it says, alcohol is but a symptom of my greater obsessions. But alcohol always made it better. It always made the fun funner. It always made the bad worse. It always made me feel okay. Everything was just okay. So he explained that to me, and I got that. I don't know why I got it, but I got it. I understood it. That I'm totally, absolutely powerless. What my dilemma is, and my dilemma being that I'm powerless. And I, in order to help me with that, I need a psychic change. I need to change the way that I think. I need to have a power that is greater than myself. I need to figure out how that is. And so what he told me to do was he told me to put some stuff down on paper. And he basically said, and this is how, you know, this is my experience, strength and help. I'm not telling you guys how to do it. This is just how I did it. And how the guy that I worked with, and I worked with several different people who told me different ways to do it. He told me, I've always believed in a power greater than myself. I've always believed in a higher power, but I got confused with, hell and brimstone, you know, fire and brimstone, going to hell and all this other stuff that I had tried to do before and just didn't work. So I said, put it down on paper, make it simple, describe what it is and work with that. I'm like, okay, what does my God look like? Well, it's loving, it loves you, it loves me, it loves everybody. It's not going to damn you to hell. You know, it's forgiving. And I was able to develop that higher power and understand what it was and accept it. Now it's just surfing. Now I go out and surf and I meditate with my higher power, and it's all around me. It's in you. It's in me. It's in the chairs. It's in the ground. It's everywhere. So that was the very first part of getting this program. And then he guided me on to some other things and said, you know, in order for you to really change and start getting better, you need to put some more stuff down, which is going into step four, put some of your resentments down. And so that's what I did. I had a huge long laundry list of things that I needed to get off my chest. And then we sat down and we shared that together. Some of my grosser defects and things that really were haunting me as that I can see that I was drinking over. He said, "Okay, now what we're going to do is we're going to see where your character defects are, and we're going to do something different. We're going to take what you used to do, which is I drank, I used, and we're going to change that into contrary action. I'm going to show you how your old behaviors aren't working for you, and then we're going to show you how to do contrary to that." So I didn't love myself. I didn't love you. I didn't care about you. I wanted nothing to do with you. I just wanted to drink. He said, "Well, instead of doing that, why don't you start loving people? Why don't you start caring about people?" Oh, okay. So today I do. Today I love myself. I love you guys. And I know that it doesn't matter whether you love me or not. I can still love you. that was something new for me, and it opened my eyes to a lot of new stuff, a lot of good stuff. I was able to start feeling. I haven't been able to cry yet. I almost came close. I think my tear ducts have been ripped out of me, but you know, maybe they'll come back. I have hope for that. You know, guys don't cry or whatever. So this program is a program of growth and action, contrary action, finding out what my grosser character defects are. And one of the things that I really, really struck me, and it happened a while ago, was gratitude. I didn't understand that gratitude was an emotion. How I describe it is, thank you, fuck you, what else you got for me? That was really the way that I thought gratitude was. But I had a conversation with a friend, and they said, you know, what are you grateful for? I'm like, I don't know. And they started mentioning these things, and ice cream came up. And we had this conversation about ice cream. And for some reason, I got it. I got that gratitude was an emotion. And I am very grateful for ice cream. And it's the simple things, these little simple things in life that we get from other people enlighten us to whatever our character defects are. You know, it's a program of contrary action, basically is what I'm getting at, is I need to do contrary action in order to be better, be recovered. There's a lot more to that, which is the spiritual part of it, being connected with my higher power, being connected with you guys. So anyway, I think I covered some of the things that my sponsor had done. And I do that today. I do it to the best of my ability, working with other people and trying to be of service to other people. I started getting what this program offers. I started getting the gets. I started getting to be of service. I started getting to love you guys. I started getting to love myself and be who I am. Be exactly who I am, regardless of who I am. I wasn't able to do that before. I wasn't able to be... It was all an act. It was all an act of wanting to direct. That's what the program has boiled down for me. Has boiled down to me being able to be exactly who I am. So, grateful for that. I'm absolutely grateful. And I get to make turkey dinner for my kids. And I get to ask my daughter today. I get to ask my daughter if I can go to a meeting. And she knows she understands the fact that I need to go be with you guys. She understands that. She selfish in her own way that she wants me to be around. And I don't know why she wants me to be around, but that's awesome. You know, I love it. And it's only an hour or so that I am away. And then I go back and I get to be with them. In my first year of sobriety, I didn't have my kids at all. They were taken away from me. And said, and then eventually the courts did, and I'm jumping, I understand that. Eventually the courts did say, you know, Mr. Davies, it might be best that you abstain from alcohol for a long time. But I really want to stress that I got here on my own volition. I wanted, when I got here, I wanted to be here. I had no other place to go. I didn't have anywhere to go. In the book, it's clearly stated, and I'm on page 45, in We Agnostics, lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we to find it, to find this power? So that's one of the parts that we need to do in order to get to our psychic change. And how much more time do I need to speak? Yeah. What? Yeah. I'm going to go through my book. I have a lot of things highlighted in here through working different things. And this wasn't my first book that I got. On page 84, down at the bottom, the last paragraph, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it was pointed out to read it in a certain way, and you can replace it with certain words, and I replaced it with chaos. In the first sentence, and we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even chaos. There's a lot of different words I can replace in that, and it goes on through page 84, 85, at the bottom of 85. Everywhere that you see alcohol, you can replace it with a certain chaotic word, and you'll see our disease in it. We have a tendency to want these things in our life, the alcohol, the chaos. I'm attracted to that stuff, or I was attracted to that stuff. In working this program, I've been able to find some freedoms and some happiness and some love for you guys. And some love and some freedom. And it's been a great ride. I've been absolutely rocketed into the fourth dimension. And I got friends who call me and say, Rob, you know, whether they're new or been around for a while, I've been doing the deal. Rob, I'm doing the deal. I'm calling another alcoholic. I have a tendency to project into the future. You know, I like to time travel. More so prior than now, I'll worry about the future. And that's how I time travel. I'll start worrying about things that are totally out of my control, and they never end up the way that I think they should end up. Or I'll go in the past and start thinking about, oh shit, why'd I do that? Or beat myself up. And I have I do it less now than I did before. I still do it, but I do it a lot less. I couldn't have done this thing without you guys, without everybody in this room, friends, other alcoholics. I know that I need you guys in order to stay sober today. I know that I need to be up here. I know that I'm exactly where I should be today. I didn't know that before, and I'm grateful for that. You guys are awesome. Hope that I didn't bore you too much. Okay on time. Can I stop here? We're all good.